It's great to have one of the top American practitioners of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu here on JerryPark.com. A lot of fans know him as the Twister or just Eddie Bravo. Eddie, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Everything's going great. Life is spectacular.
So, Eddie, you probably don't know this, and I don't expect you to know this, but we actually met a few months ago in a sort of intimate situation, because I used to work at Spike TV, and at the last Ultimate Fight Night on Spike, which was in September, we actually sat right next to each other in the truck. And
we did.
I was working on the production side of things. You were, I believe, talking to the announcers, and I was surprised to see you because it had been a while since we had heard your voice on UFC telecast. So talk to me a bit about what exactly you're doing now with the UFC.
Well, for the last 3 years, I was doing three things. I wasn't just doing the scorecard. I was also, when I wasn't doing the scorecard, like in the, during the fights, because I only scored the championship fights, and that's usually two of the fights a night, maybe one a night officially, and if any of the other fights went to the distance, I would score those too. But in between that, I was in the truck in Joe and Joe's ear, you know, just helping him out a little bit. You know, he doesn't really need me in his ear, but every now and then I'll see a move, a setup, you know, half a second before he does, and I'll jump on it. That's most of the time I just talk shit in his ear, try to make him laugh and stuff. But I was always doing that, and I was also supervising the grappling replays. You know, before they used to, like, the producer and the director, really, they don't know jiu-jitsu, and they don't know what's going on. So if they show, you know, someone gets someone else in a beautiful triangle, usually they would just show just the guy in the triangle tapping, but they brought me in there to make sure that I queued up the replays to show the setup, you know, the setup for the triangle and the technical aspects. So I don't know if anybody's really noticing it, but the grappling replays are a lot more thorough than they were a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm still doing that. They cut the scorecard out because who knows really. There's different stories, you know, but they nonetheless cut it. But I still work for him. I still work behind the scenes, still in the truck, still supervising the replays and, you know, helping out Joe in his ear whenever, you know, he has a brain fart.
I really enjoyed your presence on the telecast simply because it sort of reminded me of like a cooler, hipper version of Harold Letterman on the HBO telecast. And I know since there's only three rounds in the non-title fights, it's kind of hard to stick you in there. But especially for the title fights, I thought it added a lot. What were some of the reasons why you heard that they sort of decided to eliminate that from the fights?
I don't know. You know, I've heard some things, but I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, at first I thought it was because of my performance, you know, but, you don't know. When they just cut a segment, you're like, oh, shit, they probably thought I sucked or something. And some people thought I sucked. But the reasons, I don't know. You know, it's a big organization. You know, I know the commission, I know the commission doesn't like to look bad, you know, because when they flash up my score on the big screen before the official score comes out, and if it's different than the official score, and the fans agree with the unofficial score, the commission can take a lot of heat, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It doesn't look good. And, we don't want to make the commission look bad. If it wasn't for the commission, the UFC wouldn't be where it's at right now. So we want to make the commission look good.
Right, you know? Right.
They've done a lot. They pretty much created this. They pretty much, not created the sport, but created this new phenomenon, you know, this new tidal wave that is mixed martial arts. And it's just beginning, you know. If it wasn't for the commission, you know, bringing it in and accepting it as a sport in Nevada, shit, we'd still be in the dark ages. So, you know, we don't want to make the commission look bad, do we?
No, absolutely not. And you just touched on my next question, how much the sport has grown in the last couple of years. And you're a big part of that in putting up those replays and cueing them at the right point to so fans can see the technique behind it. And it's not just viewed as, you know, these old stigmas of two guys just brawling it out or, you know, one guy sitting on top of another. The fans are really starting to educate themselves. I mean, you go to a live UFC event now and you can hear the crowd getting riled up as a move is beginning to take place. What are your views on the way North American fans have kind of started to learn about the techniques and the jiu-jitsu part of it and everything that goes into setting up a submission or a chokehold or something like that?
Well, back in 2000, 2001, it wasn't like that. But the Japanese fans were far more advanced as far as being educated on what the sport is really about. I mean, in Japan, in 2000, they would applaud a guard pass. You know what I mean? You know, a guard pass is just as important as a takedown. You know, if you can't pass a guy's guard, man, you're not going to be able to do shit. And, you know, you take a guy, in the States at that point, you know, people were, you know, screaming, drunk-ass fans were screaming, you know, stand him up, because, you know, but it wasn't, I didn't even blame the fans at that point because the guard passing and the jiu-jitsu technique was so bad in 2000, 2001, and it's still not very good overall. There's only a few people that are really good at passing. You know, there's still a lot of fighters out there in the big shows that don't even know how to pass the guard. They know what it is, and they can kind of do it if the guy totally sucks. But to pass the guard against a guy who's really good on his back, you know, you gotta be a master, and that's very important. And so few fighters can do that. But now we're starting to understand. Now Matt Hughes is starting to pass the guard now. Now Sean Sherk is passing the guard. All these wrestlers who didn't agree with the philosophy of passing the guard to get to the mount or the back, they thought it was just better to stay in the guard and pound. All those guys are starting to realize that it's not better to stay in the guard and pound. It's better to pass the guard, get a dominant position, pound from the mount, you know, try to get the back. That's the ultimate submission. So now that the wrestlers are starting to understand that was really the best strategy all along, and they're starting to implement it in their game, now the fans are starting to understand. And Joe Rogan's a big part of that, too. Joe Rogan's a big part of educating the masses. His jiu-jitsu is really good. He's one of my top students. He's one of my brown belts. And he knows what the hell is going on, and he's always explaining it, and he's responsible for keeping jiu-jitsu schools alive, because if Joe wasn't in there and it was like a wrestler in there, or like someone like Jeff Blatnick, they would be referring to the groundwork. Anytime there was groundwork, they would be referring it to grappling or submission wrestling, and they wouldn't use the jiu-jitsu word. And you know what I mean? It's huge. But anytime the fight hits the ground, it's always about jiu-jitsu. If they're talking about a fighter, and we're talking about his striking skills, and then we're talking about his ground skills, we're talking about his jiu-jitsu skills. So, you know, Joe Rogan's a big part of educating the masses on what jiu-jitsu really is and keeping, you know, the art alive. Because, you know, with stand-ups and, you know, that Midwest mentality, you know, the wrestling mentality, the anti-jiu-jitsu, we could have got to the point where there wasn't really any ground fighting that much. You know, people, a lot of shows are starting to have 30-second stand-ups because the jiu-jitsu was so bad, you know, and that it could have led to that in the UFC too. So anyways, what was your next question?
No, great answer there. Very extensive. I actually wanted to get your opinion on who do you think are some of the best BJJ practitioners out there right now? I mean, not just looking at the UFC, but in the whole MMA landscape.
Well, the best grapplers for sure out there, BJ Penn, Minotauro, Dean Lister, who else?
It's a pretty solid list. I mean, Minotauro is, you know, a heavyweight and still considered one of the best out there. Wanted to get your opinion because you mentioned the scoring just a few minutes ago, and especially in the last few months in the UFC, there's some question as to if the 10-point must system, which is so vital in boxing and a lot of fans kind of associate it with the sport of boxing, is the right way to score an MMA bout. Would you agree with that?
I don't think it's the right way to score a fight because it gets that system gets exposed, you know, show after show, and most of the time it's right, you know, it works. But where it doesn't work is when, you know, it's a 3-round fight and fighter A gets round one, you know, because he just landed a couple extra shots on fighter B. So it's a really close round. No one got hurt, but you give it to fighter A because he landed a couple decent shots. We go to round two, same thing happens. He lands a couple knees, but no one really gets hurt. You know, they're kind of going back and forth. Fighter A gets the second round. Round three, fighter B starts putting on the heat on fighter A, starts tagging him, takes him down, pounds him out a little bit, gets on top, passes the guard, you know, wins the round. Doesn't get a 10-8, but just wins the round decisively and ends the fight on top of him, pounding him. Fighter A wins. There's a big problem there.
Right.
You know, so that's what we see that, like, I would say once every other show it comes up, you know, and that's where the system is exposed right there. Most of the time, the system doesn't even matter, you know. It's clear that a guy won. Guy dominated the whole fight. He didn't need any kind of system.
So he just saw it. Yeah, obviously you're very close with Dana White and everyone at the UFC as well as the commissions, and I guess the boiling point for all the discussion for whether or not the 10-point must system was applicable to MMA, who came after the Bisping-Hamill fight. A lot of people were upset about that decision. Have there been any talks within the UFC offices and maybe in any other MMA organization to try to incorporate a different system of judging the fights?
Damn, man, I haven't heard anybody not, like, you know, in terms that like something was actually going to happen, like they were having meetings or something. I haven't heard that, but it doesn't mean that it's not happening. I don't, you know, I'm not privy to all details that are going on. I know some inside stuff, but
I thought you were going to give me the exclusive right now, but I guess we haven't heard of it anywhere else, but you know, I thought I'd throw it out there. Is there one submission in particular? I mean, there's been so many great submissions. I mean, just this last couple of months, we see a guy like Brad Imes pull off back-to-back Gogo Platas. Is there one that really sticks out in your mind as like a total highlight reel? Like, you couldn't believe the guy pulled this off in a certain situation that comes to mind? Like, maybe your all-time favorite?
Shinya Aoki. You know, you could put his last 3 or 4 fights together in a highlight reel, and he's doing, you know, he's doing some incredible stuff. He's got all kind of game. You know, he's got the mental part of the game down. He's tough mentally. You know, can be cocky at times and arrogant, which is, I think it's cool. He just goes out. You want that guy on your team, the guy who's fucking arrogant and cocky. You want that guy. As long as his work ethic is together, you want the guy that has better to have too much confidence and not enough. That's for sure. Those guys are warriors. And he's got complete game. He can stand. He can throw. He can take guys down. Got really good judo. He's a black belt in traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu as well, and he's playing rubber guard like no one else in the sport. So, you know, when people land in his guard, they're in trouble. He's going to bring some serious heat. He's just not going to lay there and try to grab the wrist and maybe throw a wild triangle up every now and then and kind of throw some punches back. And he's not going to do that. He's going to attack you, and his submission against Joaquin Hansen, that was unbelievable. It was awesome.
I thought you were going to bring up your triangle choke on Royler Gracie at the 2003 Abu Dhabi Submission Championships, but I guess you're trying to be humble, right?
That wasn't a real fight, man. We were just wrestling, you know?
Oh, okay, fine. But, you know, I was just talking in general. But, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, you mentioned the rubber guard, and you're one of the guys who is credited for sort of introducing it and advocating the rubber guard. For those that don't know, what is it all about?
Well, I called it the rubber guard because, you know, it definitely needed a different name because it was just a different style of playing guard. And, you know, you got open guard, you got spider guard, you got butterfly guard, and it just needed a name. So I just thought, you know, if you're playing rubber guard right, and you're effective with it and you're dangerous with it, you probably, you know, your flexibility for sure has to be really good. And, you know, when you're playing it right, it looks like your knees are made of rubber. And that's basically what it is.
And you have a few books that have come out, one just past year. I think it's come out already, correct?
Yes, Mastering the Rubber Guard. That was my second book. First book was called Jiu-Jitsu Unleashed. And then my third book just came out, Mastering the Twister.
All right, and those are pretty much how-to guides for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and talking about all your different moves and whatnot. Before we let you go, Eddie, got to ask you, George St. Pierre, Matt Hughes just announced this past week. Who are you favoring in their third bout?
I think, you know, you got to go with GSP, but Matt Hughes is one tough son of a bitch. You know, you can't, he's always in the fight, you know, you can't ever count him out 100%. But if I had to throw money down, I would definitely put it on GSP. I mean, he totally demolished him the first match. And I think it's going to go like, you know, the rematch with Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin.
Awesome
stuff. And go down just like that.
All right. We'll put you down for GSP. Eddie, thanks so much for taking the time today. And, you know, we look forward to all your great work on UFC Telecast, whether it's in front of the camera, behind the scenes, or just hearing your voice, whatever it is. Great stuff working with the sport.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.